I want to invite up Jacob Gouge. Jacob, I don't know how much we hung out in college, but we knew each other back in college. We did. Yeah. So Jacob and I have known each other for a little while. And if you're new here, we're in the middle of a series called Learn to Do Good. And we are coming out of the Isaiah 1, 16 and 17 passage that God, through the prophet Isaiah, is just sick and tired of the people of Israel's just religious worship while they're tearing each other apart. And so God says, stop doing evil and learn to do good. And so we're kind of going through the different successive things that God called his people to do, and one of them is to take up the cause of the fatherless or the orphan. And so that's what we've been, we chatted about caring for the widow and what does it mean for us to have a culture of care here at the church. But then also then last week we talked about, we actually did a little history lesson on how has the church historically cared for orphans, and then what does it look like now? And then more specifically, what does it look like? We kind of ended that the church, although it's not all that bad, the care for orphans has moved more towards an institutional and global thing that, you know, we can send money away from, but there's definitely still that reality here at home. And the early church, they definitely took it as a personal and local mission. And so one of the things that we wanted, as we're discussing the question of what does it mean for us to learn to do good in caring for orphans, that what can we do locally, what can we do? And so I think that Safe Families does a great job of what I think is called upstream. And so Jacob, can you just tell us a little bit about like the vision and mission and everything of Safe Families? You need a microphone. Yeah. I was like, I can hear you, but everyone else can't.
Can you hear me now? All right. Awesome. Well, you guys are a friendly group of people. Thank you for everyone that has already said hello. I was going to bring my wife and daughter, but my daughter's 2 years old, and she just needed some time at home this morning. So my wife and daughter are hanging back. So I like to introduce myself as the husband of Megan and the dad of Naomi. So that is my wife and daughter, and I enjoy coffee, just a side note. So I think I'm in the right place. So anyways, a little bit about Safe Families. As Jared said, we really desire to catch a family and their children upstream before it becomes a situation where child welfare, DCFS, foster care becomes involved. And the main reason that is because it's less likely, significantly less likely, that this child would ever return back to their parent or parents, or if it's a grandparent, the percentage significantly drops if they end up in the foster care system. So our mission at Safe Families is, one, yes, to keep a kid safe, but also to keep a family together. So we really desire reunification. And our vision is to see a world where families are supported by caring and compassionate communities. And as Jared said, this was a staple in the early church. If you go even back to Acts chapter 2, 42 through 47, when it talks about these different values and the way of life of the early church, they deeply cared for one another, and in such a way that some commentators say that people left cities and left jobs and moved to Jerusalem to become a part of this compassionate, hospitable, caring community. So our values at Safe Families are radical hospitality, intentional compassion, and disruptive generosity. And that's what really drives and motivates us. And just to tell you a little bit about how I got into this, when I was 14, my cousin at the time came to live with my family. And we thought, hey, this is going to be a temporary thing. We're helping out my uncle and aunt while they get back on their feet. And eventually it became a legal guardianship situation that eventually, 4 years later, became an adoption of my cousin, who's now my sister. And then my wife also, they adopted a young girl when she when my wife was about 12 years old. And so both of us, 3 years ago, were contemplating, do we want to do foster care? Do we want to do something like Safe Families? And we really fell in love with the mission and vision of Safe Families because it's not just keeping this kid safe temporarily, but it's seeing the kid return home. And the reason we love that is because, yes, adoption is redemptive. It's beautiful. It's a picture of what God in Christ has done for us. But we have seen our adopted siblings wrestle for years. Who do I belong to? Who am I? And they've been loved. They've been cared for. But they've struggled. And so we just really were captivated by the vision of seeing kids be kept safe, but also return home. So that's a little bit of how we got involved. We've been volunteering for 3 years, and then next month I'll be on staff for a year. That'll be a year for me. And I do church and community engagement in Kankakee County, and then also in the southern Cook County, which is where you guys fall. So,
awesome.
Can you tell the story of like how long a Safe Family's been around? What even spurred the creation of Safe Family? Yeah.
So Safe Families was founded back in 2003 by a guy named Dave Anderson in the Chicagoland area. So started in Chicago. We're now in 40 plus states, Hong Kong, Kenya, the United Kingdom, and Canada, and expanding to more. So if you don't see me in a couple months, it's because I moved to Hawaii to be a part of the chapter expansion there. And I'm just kidding. That's one of the states that we're not in yet. But anyways, so Dave was a child psychologist, also worked in the welfare system. And he was working in a welfare organization. And a mother came to him one day and said, hey, you know, I need someone to hang out with my kids for a little bit while I work through something. But it wasn't a situation where she wanted the kids to be removed. She just needed some help. And she had no friends, no family, zero support. And that's a lot of times the types of situations our parent or parents or guardians find themselves in. They have no support surrounding them. And so Dave said, well, really, technically, we can't help you unless your child's being abused or neglected. Unfortunately, that is how the system often works, is there has to be abuse, there has to be neglect before help, genuine help is offered. And so Dave got this idea, well, I guess me and my wife could just temporarily take your kid. And then that idea sparked the idea of this should be like something that we invite the church to do specifically. So we really are driven by our partnership with the church as a ministry. And so that really is where it birthed, is he had this idea to help this mom out. He temporarily helped her out. The kids stayed with mom. They weren't separated. And then that caused him to then just start. He met with the mayor of Chicago at one point. He met with the person that was at the time director of DCFS. They both basically told him he was crazy. There's no way you're going to get people to do something like this for free. Because as you know, foster parents are paid. But in Safe Families, it's all volunteer. No pay. People do it because, again, we serve a God who came to us, who loved us, who adopted and accepted and cared for us. And we want to be a reflection of him to those that we surround. And so, anyways, that is a little bit of how it all came about.
So you work with Kankakee County, South Cook County. As we're talking local, what is Safe Family seeing? What are you seeing as like the needs, the stats that represent our area?
Yeah, so you know, everybody plays a part. So you may be sitting in the chair this morning thinking, well, I can't temporarily take a kid into my home and I can't really, you know, do this whole hosting piece of Safe Families. Well, that's okay. We have what's called family friends. We have what's called resource friends. We have what's called volunteer family coaches, and I can get more into that later. But I say all of that to say the need is not just for kids to be hosted temporarily. The need is for parent and parents to have support. I would really say that's a big need, family support, family stabilization, because a lot of these parents love their kids. They want their kids with them. They just don't have support. They themselves have been in the foster care system at one point. They themselves don't have family. They don't have friends for whatever reason that may be. And so I would say the biggest thing, whether you're hosting to support them or we are supporting them by connecting them to resources that they need, I would say support and stabilization are big things. There is the hosting need, yes. Part of that support is taking the kid into the home, caring for them. And I would say that, you know, there's always a need to give to the work, but especially the support, the stabilization, the keeping the kids safe, but also keeping the family together. I do have a couple stats. You mentioned stats, Jared, so let me pull that up. So since 2003, in our chapter, we've helped specifically almost 4,700 children and almost 3,000 families in a variety of ways. So when I say help, I mean sometimes hosting, sometimes family friending. So family friending can involve mentoring a parent. It can involve mentoring a child, because I think we would all agree in the modern day world that we live in, a lot of times fatherlessness and widows looks like a single mom and her kids. That it may not be because the single mom lost her husband because he died. It may be because he was never involved. And so mothers and fathers and grandparents need the support surrounding them. So the family friend can come alongside a parent and mentor them, talk with them, share failures and successes of parenting. We all have them in parenting. You know, you can mentor a kid. You can transport a child from their parent to the host family while they host. So those, but I would say, yeah, the support, the stabilization, the mentoring, developing what we call in safe families, parental protective factors. So there's five protective factors in safe families that we really highlight that help a parent be able to keep their child in their home once they return. And that would be something I would share in a training for anybody that ever wanted to become a volunteer. But yeah, those are the stabilization, support, mentoring. Those are the big things.
What, so about what you said about, you know, couple thousand, few thousand, yeah, in just in this area, yeah, like in this, you know, area, yeah, since 2003. Do you think there's a higher need than that? I know you have like an intake, you know, you can do intake and everything. Are there times that you're like, we don't have, you know, a host home? Or is it a lot of, you know, getting the word out that you guys exist?
Yeah, so I think it's both. I think that we always can use and desire more volunteers. We like to say in safe families we're volunteer-driven and professionally supported. And what we mean by that is the volunteers drive the movement of safe families. You're the ones on the battlefield, on the ground, but you're also the ones that are telling all your friends and family about the work of safe families and encouraging them to become involved. And then as staff, we come around you, make sure you're equipped, make sure you're trained, make sure you as a church have everything that you need. So volunteer-driven, professionally supported. So we always need more volunteers. But I would say, yeah, we're only, it'll be 20 years in 2023 that we've existed. And, yeah, we continue to need to get the word out. Often we get referrals, whether it's from churches or hospitals or police stations or shelters, schools. I would say oftentimes, though, it's a parent themselves calling into safe families for whatever reason they found out. But yeah, I would say getting the word out is a big thing that we're continuing to grow in. And I think that in the past 2 years, the numbers have been lower due to COVID. Just some parents not calling that maybe do need help, but don't feel comfortable asking for help, putting their kid in hosting. But then also many of our volunteers, understandably so, not feeling comfortable hosting kids at the time when everything was going on. So I think that we're coming out of the, like many people are, including churches, coming out of COVID, and We're building back. We're reconnecting with former volunteers, seeing if they're interested in continuing. And then we're onboarding new volunteers. So I think it's a little bit of both, getting the word out, but also getting more people involved. And like I said, everybody has a part to play.
Can you just share, do you have, I know it's probably discreetly, but a story or two about like the impact that you guys have seen in, you know, what has happened in, you know, host family saying, yeah, I would host, or, you know, a resource family, you know, what kind of impact have you seen through that?
Yeah, so a couple stories. Again, like I said, my wife and I have been volunteering through Safe Families for 3 years. We've hosted six times, so I should say with four different families, and then probably like 10 times altogether. One of those times was with one family, six different hostings with that one family. And so recently, in February, we started hosting a two-year-old girl named Amila, and her mom grew up in the foster care system. She's 19, and she has this two-year-old girl loves her daughter, loves her so much. And so we have, since February, really gotten to know this little girl and her mom. And so it's been, I think, like I said, six times that we've hosted on and off. And just 3 or 4 weeks ago, mom is in a great place, and she was just going on a trip for her birthday, and she reached out to my wife and I and said, hey, I don't really trust anybody else. Would you take Amila for 4 days while I go on this trip? So it wasn't a Safe Family related thing. It was just, hey, you are family now. I trust you. Can you hang out with my daughter while I go? It's no different than if I was asking my mother-in-law to take care of my little girl when my wife and I go on a trip. So that's one story. There's another story that we share in training of a family who took in this young mom's two kids temporarily for a time being and developed a relationship with the mom as well. And over time, the host mom and the place, so we use the language of placing parent, so the parent that placed the child in the host home. So the host mom and the placing mother developed a relationship. The host mom started encouraging the placing mother to go back to school, asking her what would you like to go back to school for? So she ended up going back to school to get her dental assistance. She is doing great. She has both of her kids. They continue to have a long-term relationship. And that's the success of Safe Families, is the ongoing relationship. It's the maintaining the relationship even after Safe Families has kind of faded to the back. And there's actually research, psychological, sociological research that Dave, our founder, and others have done to prove that's what makes Safe Family successful, is the ongoing relationship that continues even after we made the initial connection. So those are a couple stories. I'm trying to think if there's so many more. My wife and I continue with one, the first family that we ever hosted for at Christmas time. We continue to get together and exchange gifts. And so sometimes there's really successful stories, and I would be lying to you if I told you that there wasn't also difficult stories where things don't go how we thought they would go. But it's a beautiful thing that we've gotten to do, that we do as a ministry, and there's probably so many more stories I could share.
So Safe Families primarily steps in crisis moment, but the goal, most of the time, the reason why families, placing families, place with Safe Families is because they're in crisis, they don't have support. The goal is for them to have ongoing support after interacting with Safe Families, otherwise they could just end right back in to crisis.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Sweet. So we have hosting families, we have, you know, support families, we have family friends. What does it look like for like churches as an organization to partner with Safe Families?
Yeah, so there's a variety of ways that churches can partner with us. A church can simply be a church that promotes the work of Safe Families, so just simply tells their people about Safe Families. And then The next level would be you have a formal ministry within your church of a group of volunteers that own the work of Safe Families and builds what's called a circle of support. So circle of support would consist of a variety of types of volunteers. So that would include host families, family friends, resource friends, and then volunteer family coaches. And you would work to support one another as well as the families you're working with. And so, you know, what I've seen in my year almost of doing this job is a church is really successful when they build a circle of support into their Safe Family ministry so that the volunteers feel supported as they do the work. And so, and then there's what's called community lead churches, and those churches not only support people within their local congregation, but other people that are a part of other churches, but their churches are not partners with Safe Family churches yet. So a community lead church would work with those volunteers as well. But yeah, it really works well when a church owns it together, and not only you're supporting others, the people that you're serving, but you're also supporting one another. Because it's easy in this work, because it's hard work, but it's fruitful, rewarding work, if you don't have support, to burn out, to get discouraged, to get disappointed. And so we need, even as the volunteers, we need one another to be able to do this work well.
I'm going to ask this. Oh, actually, maybe I'll open it up. We usually have a fairly good question bunch. I prepped you guys for this. To ask questions. So does anybody have, I mean, I could continue to ask questions, but if you're like, what, if you're having any questions in your head, anybody have any questions about, say, families for Jacob?
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you for all that you're doing to parent your kids through all that you're experiencing. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, so great question. So we sometimes churches.
I'm going to repeat the question quick so that everybody can.
Yes, no problem.
So she asked if there's any lists that like Safe Families has, like for kids, like that they need or anything like that. So
we don't have specific lists, but what some churches do along with the other parts of the ministry is they have what's called a resource closet within their church. And so that would consist of diapers, wipes, toys, clothes, sometimes car seats, sometimes strollers. Because, again, a lot of these, all of these volunteer families are doing this for free. And so many churches will have a resource closet that their volunteer families can get things from. But then also, if they are developing a relationship with a placing family could also receive those things as well. And so... but a resource friend, resource friends are people that would feel maybe a little less like, hey, I don't want to necessarily be hands-on as a host or a family friend, but I really feel compelled to give financially or to get diapers or to take a meal to a host family while they're hosting. So that would be a great way where the ministry lead in your church, so whoever the volunteer person would be leading the Safe Family Ministry, for example, if you had that, would when a hosting starts, rally the troops together, and they would say, hey, such and such resource friend, can you get this? And so there's not necessarily a list, but there's a wide variety of ways you can give either financially or of other resources to host families or placing families.
Did you still have a question?
That a host family could get into? So, I mean, I would say, I don't know if I would use the word bad situation as much as, again, you are going to be opening your heart and your home to a family, and a family in crisis who has faced difficult things and is facing difficult things. And so you just have to be prepared for, you know, for example, the differences in their upbringing or even just your values in your home being different than the child that's coming into your home and just working through you guys getting to know each other and just being prepared for there may be some behavioral issues or there may be some difficulty connecting with the parent that you're working with. Because we really, a part of what we do is encourage weekly communication between the placing parent and their child while they're in hosting. Because when they're doing safe families, they do not lose custody of their children. They still have full parental rights. So no parental rights are lost when a child is placed into hosting. And so we really encourage the host family to keep communication. And that varies with each placing family. Some families want to talk more than others. And so I would just say it's, you know, it's the communication. It's the differing values. It's sometimes there's behavioral difficulties. And that just comes with, you know, opening our homes to those that are different than us, those that come from different backgrounds than us, maybe sometimes similar backgrounds. So those can bring difficult situations. We always have staff support, and in your church, ideally, you have the support of others that will come around you and work with you through that. So those are some of the challenging communication, behavioral things like that. It's a great question. Yes. Yeah, so in South Cook, we do not have any specific resource closets yet. The only resource closet that I know of is in Shanahan, which is near Joliet. But if you had something that you really wanted to donate to Safe Families, Jared can get that from you, and then he can give that to me. And I can either take that to Shanahan, or as I, you know, make my way to other churches in the area, you know, when we find a resource closet, give it there. So please, if you have anything that you'd like to give, I will take it for now, and I will definitely find a place for it. So no worries. Yeah, so a couple goals for us would be that the church would return to its ancient roots of being a hospitable community that cares and is compassionate. So that would be one, that we would be able to help and partner with the church in recapturing that ancient way of being compassionate and hospitable. The other would be the child welfare deflection, so that less and less children would end up in the foster care system, and less families would be permanently separated from each other. And then the third would be child neglect and abuse prevention, that those numbers would go down. And then the fourth would be family support and stabilization, that we would see families not just temporarily putting their kids in hosting and then just continuing to flounder and struggle, but that they would have been able to build support and have skills for themselves, but then also learn that here's the people that I can feel confident and safe to reach out to when I'm facing a crisis. Because the reality is everybody sitting in a chair in this room right now, including myself, has faced and will probably face a crisis within the next week or two, whether it's small or big. You know, we face crises in life. Some of us just don't have the support systems that others do. And so those would be the main things that we're wanting to do. And we actually work really closely with child welfare. So DCFS and Safe Families, we have a great relationship. Sometimes we host children that are, their families are kind of on the fringe of potentially becoming kids going into protective custody. So sometimes we have DCFS involved and Safe Family involved hostings. I don't recommend that be your first hosting experience, but as you get down the road and you become more confident, if you feel really compelled and called, those are more like 2-3 month, 4 month, sometimes 6 month type of hostings. Those are our most vulnerable families, and those are a little more intense situations. But we have seen when we do hosting for those families, kids return back to their parents and they don't end up in protective custody. And sometimes we've seen kids end up in protective custody. So, great question.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's a great question. We do about all together, if you really are consistent and get it done, it'll take you like 9 to 10 hours altogether to do everything. So that's fingerprinting, background check, training, I would come to your home if you're a host family. I would assess your home, make sure it's safe and suitable for kids. I'd interview you, get to know you a little bit better. But all in all, it's about a 9 to 10 hour type of process with everything. And usually with foster care, it's about 60 hours. Maybe, yeah, I could be wrong on that, something like that. But we pride ourselves. I don't know if pride is the right word. I say we have all the safeguards in place, mandated reporter training, fingerprinting, background checks, training, ongoing training. I come to your home, I assess your home, I get to know you. If it's not a great conversation, I nicely would kindly recommend, hey, maybe this isn't for you, or have you thought about serving in this way? So we are vetting in a intentional way, but it's less intensive comparatively to like becoming a foster parent, but still with all of the safeguards and legalities in place. So great question.
And you guys still do, when a child is placed, weekly visits?
Correct. Yeah. So, for example, if you as a person in the congregation felt compelled to be a volunteer family coach, so that would be a volunteer who once a week would go to the host family's home to check on the host family and to check on the child in hosting. How's the child doing? How's the relationship between the host family and the child going? How is relationship between host and placing parent going? You would go, and they would follow up once a week. First 48-hour visit, so as soon as a kid gets into your home, within the first 48 hours, one of our staff, a volunteer coach, sometimes a staff, is going to come to your home, make sure that transition started off smoothly. So, great question. Yeah, that's a great question. So we obviously would not allow a child to go back home if it remains an unsafe situation. And so, again, because they still have parental rights and they're meeting, they should be, and most often they are, with a family coach once a week as well. So they're meeting with the staff family coach. Host family is meeting with the volunteer family coach. And so once a week they're checking in. Are they accomplishing goals like getting housing or finding daycare or finding a job, whatever their goals may be? And we will not put them back home if it's not safe. But if they're accomplishing goals, if they're stable, we'll send them back home. So, for example, when we first hosted Amila, her mom asked for a 4-week hosting. At the 2-week mark, her mom felt comfortable and okay with her coming back home. She missed her, wanted her to come back home. She had secured daycare at that time. She'd secured a job, not daycare yet, but she had stuff situated to where Mila would still be cared for. And so she returned home at the 2-week mark. But there's always staff, placing parent conversations going on, and they're not going to be placed back. Now, that would be, for a more in-depth response to that question, that would be more of like a question for a family coach, supervisor. So that could be covered in training even as well. But I know that we're for sure not going to send them back home if it's unsafe still. So great question.
Yeah, one more.
Correct. Yeah, so let's say.
He asked if he worked with the parents.
Oftentimes we, thank you. Oftentimes we, I need to give you guys a microphone. Oftentimes we will have, what am I trying to say here? Our intake office, this is what I'm trying to say. Our intake office, a parent will call the intake line. There's an intake form. On that intake form, there are questions to help see if this parent or parents actually want their child to return home. We are less likely to help this family or parent if they're really not interested in their child coming home, because we really want to see the family reunified. There are cases where we do, especially in the DCFS-involved situations, there are cases where we do, but we're vetting this situation, this parent as well, to see if they're really serious about, I have goals that I want to accomplish, it's harder to accomplish them with my child right now, can you temporarily care for my child while I work through these things? So, again, there are parents in situations where we'll still help them. But, yeah, we work with the parents very closely, connecting at least once a week, following up, connecting them to the resources they need, because we also have a resource network, because we don't do everything in Safe Families. So we're connected with others that do other types of things. So, great question. Yeah, that's a great question. So she asked, with the parents that we often work with, do we find that they're just in a difficult situation and they really do want to do the work to be able to care for their child, but they just are facing a difficult situation? I would say yes, 100%. There are situations where that's not the case, but more often than not, that is the case. You know, like I said earlier, any of us could find ourselves in a crisis situation, a difficult time. And I bet most of us in the room, maybe not all, but most of us have five people immediately that come to our mind that we could call, that we could text, that we could email and say, hey, if we still email, and some people just call and text these days, or Facebook, or, you know, I'm a millennial, but I'm not actually big into social media. But anyways, we have people we can call and get a hold of and say, hey, I gotta find a job. I got to go to an interview. Mom, can you watch my child? Or I really need to go get substance abuse help. Hey, aunt or uncle or friend, can, like, we have those people probably. And so, and those are maybe not situations that are relevant to us per se, or some of us. But all of that to say, these parents just find themselves in difficult situations and lack the necessary support to get out of them. And so we come alongside them. So 100%. Yes. That's the short answer is yes. The long answer is everything that I just said.
Awesome. Well, Jacob's going to be back at, he set up a table back here, so he'll be back at the table after service. Just real quick, next steps for us as a church is honestly just kind of be praying about, you know, what does it look like? What Jacob said is they prefer that, you know, the ministry within the church is actually like not staff run, but it's actually all volunteer ran, because their ministry is volunteer driven as well. So maybe you heard something that you're like, I want to help make this happen here at Ridgeland Church. Like, I would want to help coordinate it. I would want to, you know, kind of be the person. We can definitely have a conversation. Love to be a partner church, but really that is in response to where the Lord is leading you all, and how he's calling you and shaping you. And so also, we don't want to, I personally don't want to bite off more than what we can chew. So
can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
So Jared, as a pastor, has so many other things that he's responsible for, and as a pastor, he wants to, like Ephesians 4 says, equip the people for the work of ministry. And so he is doing an excellent job. I love when I come across pastors that want to equip their people, that say, here's this need. I want to see my people own it. And so I just encourage you, as you seek the Lord, if the Lord pulls on your heart, say yes and take the step of faith. And I'm very confident Macy and Jared will support you. They won't leave you on your own to do it. They'll support you. And yeah, I'm just excited and I'm thankful just for the time Jared's given me this morning, the time he and I have spent connecting before this. And just excited to see how things unfold at Ridgeland. There's great need even in your own neighborhood, not just in the city, but in your own neighborhood and in this area. So I'm just excited for whatever this continues to look like moving forward.
Awesome. Well, yeah, so let's just be praying. Feel free to be open. Jacob's going to, go back to his table. Let's pray as we close. God, we are grateful for organizations like Safe Families that can do all the work that they're doing, and then they're inviting and calling churches to re-engage of what the church used to do. That they are setting an example and calling the church to this radical hospitality of caring for our neighbors that are just simply in crisis and need. That they're not bad parents. They're not, you know, neglecting their child in any purposeful way, but they just need support. They need a community. And God, this is the kind of community that you envisioned when you said that you wanted heaven to be on earth. So God, as we call us, tug on our hearts, tug on our minds to what you might be leading us to do, whether that's being a host family or a ministry leader or a resource family or a family friend, God, shape us. Help us to take this serious scriptural call to care for the orphan. And it looks different these days than it did when the scripture writers were writing. And so may we see the heart behind that call, that it's not just for those who have parents who have passed away, but we can participate in making sure that families don't get divided. So God, we are open. Speak to us and lead us in your name. Amen. And you are dismissed.